So, thank you all for coming. It's near the end of the long day, but it is a very important day, as Dr. Randolfi just said. I have no financial disclosures to make. Who would pay me? I work at a university, a small university in Nashville, Tennessee. And of course, everything I say is my opinion, not the opinion of Belmont University. A minute or two about Men's Health Network. Men's Health Network remains one of the only organizations dedicated to the overall health and well-being of men. After all the years, men have been around. After all that is said and done about how sick men are and how difficult it is to get men to health care, Men's Health Network remains a stalwart in trying to provide both public policy and outreach and educational material to men to better their lives. That, to me, is a stunning commentary about the interests of men in health. We're finally recognized as a population. Hoorah! I teach a course on men's health at the school, and I announced this to my class early on in the semester, and they were befuddled. In fact, walking around the meeting today, the past few days, Scott and I and some of the others at the exhibit hall talked with people about the formation of the caucus, and people scratched their head and said, "Well, I always thought there was a men's health section here. You mean there isn't a men's health section here? Wow." So one of the dilemmas is men are just now being recognized as a population that requires not just information about their health, not just transmittal of information about their health, not just education about their health, but they need it in a way that is receptive to them. One of the dilemmas we face, one of the basic tenets of public health, of course, is that messages must be given to and in a way that reflects the needs and the rhetoric of the target audiences. And I think we haven't done a very good job of that for men. Talk about a few things here so to set the stage for my colleagues coming on. Down on the poor state of men's health, I don't think it's going to be a big surprise to anybody, but it's good just to refresh yourselves and lay the groundwork for what's going to happen. What I think are some of the probable causes for this dilemma: the role of the media, certainly a very powerful force in society, above a window and a driver of the way society views itself, and what we have not been doing, taking advantage of media, and then some suggestions from myself that maybe we can utilize as the Men's Health Caucus grows over the next few years. So some national data, not looking good for the guys. When you look at mortality rates for men, life expectancy of birth, you can see it's for all men, it's not anywhere near as good as it is for the women, despite the fact that there have been significant advances on all fronts in health, and despite the fact that men have been getting treatment for a lot of conditions over the years. And still, men still live shorter than women, and in fact, when you look at the life expectancy for males, it's declined since the 1920s, and in the 1920s, women lived 1 year longer. Now women live 6 years longer than men. So something is not right. We're not reaching these guys. We're not motivating these men. We're certainly not getting to the boys who then will grow into men. We're not getting the messages across. Leading causes of death. I don't think this is a particular surprise to any of you who are epidemiologists. I am not, so I look at these numbers and they're always surprising to me when I look just how bad it is on a national level. One of the very, very sad things, and we'll talk a little bit about this tomorrow when we talk about military and stresses in military life, is the suicide rate for men. It's abysmal. It's atrocious. And when you look at it for young boys, it's even worse. So one of the very specific public health area that I think a lot could be done is suicide rates for our men. Take a little bit of a look at some state data. One of the problems Men's Health Network has always identified is there isn't a good, strong public policy base, and no one pays attention to outreach. So we did a survey, which was a landmark survey, in 2008, looking at state departments of public health and looking at the amounts of information that they have available to women and to men. Not to polarize it, but just to give some contrasting and comparative data. We polled all states in the District of Columbia. We received information from 49 states and D.C., so for 50 state public health entities. And then we validated the results that we received back from the mail-out survey by actually looking on the websites to see if there were correlations with what was on the survey and what we were observing on the website. This was published, by the way, it will be published this year in the American Journal of Men's Health. It's electronically available. And what we found surprised even us, that we found that in of the state departments of public health, About 66% of them had organized sections for women and girls, but only 18% of them have any organized section for men and boys. That there was some sort of a commission or activity or some sort of a blue ribbon panel, if you will, to study the needs of men and boys in the states. We found there, too, that the states were decidedly lacking. Much of what we found anecdotally, we didn't collect the data specifically, was that these are unfunded for the men and for the boys, whereas there is a significant amount of funding for women's. We have yet to catalog that, so I can't present that as data, but that is an impression in talking with folks afterwards. And then where's the information? If there's any information at all available for the guys, only 15% of the states have any information for the men and the boys, and in almost every case, it was subsumed under the women's health information sites. So again, violating one of the basic principles of good communications to individuals, we find that it's there, but it's sort of like this room, it's kind of buried way in the back, and you have to really be deliberate to look for it. And I'm afraid we all know how deliberately men and boys look for information on health. So one of the dilemmas is, even with a simple thing such as our departments of public health and the ubiquitousness of web-based information there is provided by states, it's hard for them to find. We're not taking advantage of this very powerful electronic technique to reach men. Tennessee, where Belmont University is, just completed one of the few men's health report cards. They did a women's health report card in 2009, and they're doing in 2008, and they're doing the men's health report card this year, and they're going to flip-flop. We just published this report, and this is a rather long website, but we can get that for anyone who wants later on. It was published, and it was a combined project with Vanderbilt, Meharry, and the State Health Department, and I was privileged to serve on the advisory committee for this report card. And then what we looked at is we looked at causes of death in 14 specific indicators for men, we looked for sexually transmitted infections with three specific indicators, 10 specific health indicators in healthy behaviors, and 3 specific indicators in obstacles to health. And what we did is we tried to measure the performance of men in our state using a State Department of Public Health information to gauge it, to tag it along with the 20 Healthy People 2010 targets for healthy behaviors. And then we graded, like good academicians that we are, we graded everything A through F. And I will tell you, a secret that everybody in the world should know. We had a heck of a hard time trying to decide how to set these parameters A to F. Because if we set them, this is a secret now, if we set them the way the Women's Health Report Card was set a couple of years before, almost every parameter, in almost every parameter, men would have received a D or an F. So we massaged it a little bit, being sensitive to being good politically correct and sensitive individuals. We massaged it a little bit, and we found almost two-thirds of them were at D or F, but a lot better than almost every one of them. So here's how it breaks out. We did have some good news in the state of Tennessee, and I would submit to you that the good news in Tennessee parallels that in many, many other states. So it's a relatively speaking good news. Diabetes deaths were down when you compare it, you look at these parameters against the CDC goals. Prostate cancer deaths, we did pretty well. Lower respiratory tract infections, we did pretty well. Percentage of men age 65 who receive flu shots, we did pretty well. In Tennessee, as in most states now, with pharmacies who can immunize, there's flu shots available on every street corner, and we bring health care to the men where they probably don't necessarily want to go to hospitals. We do it in clinics, we do it at work, we do it in lots of places where the men's are, so we're certainly taking advantage of being there when the men want to go and get health care, which is usually never. Percentage of men 18 and over who have had a cholesterol screening within the last 5 years, similar sort of thing. We bring simple to use screening techniques to where men live, work, and play. And this has had a very powerful impact, at least in Tennessee, and I would guess in some other states as well. We didn't do so well in many, many other parameters. Heart disease, overall rates of cancer, lung cancer, head and neck cancers, chronic liver disease and cirrhosis, acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, motor vehicle suicides and homicides. We were getting Fs, and they were very, very embarrassing statistics for our state. when you compare the downward trends. So not only is it bad, but in some cases it's getting even worse than it was in 2003. Suicide deaths, HIV/AIDS, early latent primary secondary syphilis, percentage of men who are at healthy weight, on a decline, percentage of men who are obese, on the increase, percentage of men 18 drinking more than 5 drinks a day or on an occasional basis, increasing, percentage of men who are on who have health insurance, declining also. So in many respects, we're a lot worse off in Tennessee in 2008 than we were in 2003. And that's not a very good thing. Let's talk a little bit about the role of media in all of this. Very powerful. I found it very wonderful to see the American Journal of Public Health a couple of months ago. There was some very wonderful articles on the importance and the role of advertising as a way to get public health messages across, and they republished an article from the 1915, I believe, an article that showed the power of public health, of advertising as a public health messaging instrument, and we've gotten away from that in public health. We've let it get into the hands of the media. So a little study I and some of my students are conducting, we wanted to just quantitate the information about just how much advertising about health and health messages is there in general popular vehicles, publication vehicles, in this case magazines, for men versus women. I will say this is information, you heard from my introduction, I spent a lot of time in industry, this is information every advertiser and marketer on Madison Avenue and up and down the pharma corridors knows. But it's not information we as public health people can fully appreciate. So hopefully this will be some information that we can use as public health advocates. We reviewed 198 randomly selected popular magazines. We found this percentage layout of magazines targeted for men, 16%, magazines targeted for women, 55%, and neutral magazines such as Newsweek and those sorts of things, about 29%. And gladly or happily, the sample that we studied, look at these advertising messages, represented the overall spectrum of the types and the breakdown of magazines by gender that we see in the top 200, I think, markets. We reviewed 7,017 ads, God bless my research student, male-targeted ads, 1,468, about 20% of them were male-targeted ads, 8% had any kind of message about health or wellness. Compare that to the 3,713 ads for women, 17.8% of those had some kind of message about health. We need to look at the neutral ads. And it's very hard to classify anything as completely neutral, but those that appeared neutral to the observer, to the rater, and it was a single rater that did all the evaluations of all of these ads, about 11% of them were health-oriented, pretty much paralleling what we saw with the female health ads. So we're not taking, the commercial advertisers are not providing information to men about health. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. Men's Health Network has tried to go out and get support for men's health causes, cause marketing for men. And the thing we hear back from advertisers is, well, men do not purchase and do not make health healthcare-related decision-making. So that's not an area that we care to play in. When I ask you, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? Do men and boys not make healthcare decision purposes, purchase decisions, because they are not promoted to, we as public health officials and members and clinicians, or the media? One of my students made an interesting observation. He said, you know, Dr. G, Men's Health Magazine and Maxim define what it is to be a healthy man in the 21st century. What an interesting observation by a young fellow. And I don't know that I could argue that with him much. I think if you look at who is using the power of the media to define health for men and boys and women and girls, it is the media. The women have really held the media accountable for a long time now to provide healthy messages as well as messages on cosmetics and other things. Many times they've done a bad job, but much more frequently, in my estimation, they've done a good job or a better job for the women and girls than they have done for the men. This is something that we as public health individuals and clinicians need to harness. sociologic view and appropriate that acculturates men and boys to not looking at health as something that's important to them. And in fact, media, if you look at this little media survey, you can see that it drives men away from thinking of themselves as good, active, and vibrant men, sociologically men, if they make healthcare decisions or if they look at healthcare purchasing decisions. Healthcare policy and research and infrastructure just isn't there for men. There's one American Journal of Men's Health, and that's it. When you look at the journals dedicated to research in women's health, or the amount of funding for women's health, it's wonderful, but we need to do a little bit better to help define the issues revolving around men and boys. There's a lack of, and here I think is probably the bottom line, we all have to take personal responsibility for our health. And men and boys, unlike women and girls, have not taken personal responsibility for their health. These are things that I think we need to be able to work on. So some of my suggestions for strategies, I think we're apparent, certainly we need to have people think about the men of health in a overall way. I worked with Hugh Barber, who was one of the founders of Female Patient, decades ago in the 70s, I believe, when it was a radical idea to publish a magazine for women that looked at the entire woman's health. I think we have to do that. Hugh and his contemporaries brought women's health from between the knees and the belt, and that's unfortunately where much of the messaging for boys and young men is. We need to bring it out of that zone. Identify men as a population with identifiable disparities. I think that's true. When you look at some of the statistics that I just laid out in front of you, the national statistics, the statistics from my own state, you see that there are some disparities in the way, if not we try and reach out to men, but the way men embrace what we're telling them and what they do for themselves. Strong focus policy consistent with Healthy People 2010. It'll be very, very interesting to us as advocates to see where Healthy People 2020 positions men in their review, if it gives credence to men as a population and suggestions for men as a population that needs a little bit extra work. Stimulate research on men and boys and promote high-profile publication strategies. Encourage mass media to carry broad-based health messages for men and boys to get out of that vicious self-fulfilling prophecy cycle I believe we see in advertising. Conduct outreach where men live, work, and play. One of the stalwarts and one of the greatest successes Men's Health Network has had, and some of the successes I believe we saw in the Tennessee data, are because health care and screening is being brought to where men are. I had the privilege of working on the Viagra account. Yes, I was one of those folks. And we did some screenings at NASCAR, a Winston Cup-sponsored NASCAR. When I went to the American Academy of Family Physicians and asked for their support to support those sort of screenings, we don't want to be there. There's drinking, there's smoking, there's fatty food, there's fried Oreos, there's all sorts of stuff. And I said to them, what better place to have a medical presence than a place where you have all of those things? So we need to be a little bit more aggressive in bringing health care screening and health messages to where men live, work, play, and pray. Encourage women as strong advocates. I see my colleague Teresa Morrow, Women Against Prostate Cancer, here. If the guys aren't going to do it, let's just work with the women as we probably should and get women to be advocates for men's health. There are some important consequences to families as well as to women in their lives, and I think women have a very important role to play and could play an even stronger role than we now see present. So those are my comments, and I hope they're a help.